Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a party cast lined up for you. Chris is here. Grant is here. Brooke is here. Pernell is here. How's everybody doing?
We're good.
Partying.
Casting. Partying hard.
Partying and casting. We quickly started the recording because, Grant, you brought up a game that you dabbled in.
I did. Should I dabble in it some more?
Yes, let's.
Now that we're tracking,
let's discuss this game.
I just yelled Viewfinder because I just played the demo. It's a part of the, can't remember the name of the event, the Steam demo party.
The Next 9000. Fest.
Next Fest is going on right now, and there are demos for probably 100,000 games, give or take.
That explains the list.
And I've gotten emails for all of them just today.
Oh, I bet. I went. Actually, the first thing I always do is I go and I like narrow it down by like the racer category. No one's ever making car games, so I checked out what was there. And then like I decided to look at the most downloaded, and I saw Viewfinder, and I've been super excited about that game. And it's like it's one of those where, you know, ever since Portal, it takes a something special to break your brain in a completely new way. There was that game where you could pick up like chess pieces and set them far away from you, and they became giant chess pieces. What's that one called? Oh, I can't remember what it was called.
Oh,
it was pretty cool. Anyway,
That sounds cool.
It's neat. Can't remember what it's called. Viewfinder basically involves taking photographs like Polaroids, and then you can place them in the environment, and then those become doors, and what you took a picture of becomes a 3D environment in the picture. It's really hard to describe.
It is.
But you could look at the trailer.
Really
and get the
trippy.
Idea.
It's. I first saw trailers for this at a PlayStation event. I played it on PS5 just this past weekend because I had some company over for a party, and they were like, "Oh, what's that Viewfinder game?" I'm like, "Oh man, I didn't know the demo was out yet." So I downloaded the demo, fired it up. And it was just breaking my brain with how friggin' cool this game is and how overused this is, but unique of a premise that it is. And
unique.
Is it a puzzler at heart?
Oh, very much so, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think there's
it looks
like
crazy.
There's some story going on, but it's really about connecting all these vignettes with like different ways to use the pictures, right, Joe? I mean, that's kind of
like for example, the area that you have to get to for to complete the level, there's no walkway there. So you turn around, you explore the area, and there's a picture of a bridge. So you go sideways, you hold the picture up to where the bridge would help you in the game, you hit the button, and that picture is now the level.
Yo.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
It's
like
rad.
It is something you have to play to really grasp. It is on PS5 and PC, I believe. I don't think it's slated for anything else.
No, it wasn't on the trailer at the Day of the
Fucking
Devs.
Yeah!
Couldn't put Xbox up there, so I was a little bummed about that. But I can play it on PC, so I'll be doing that for sure.
Yeah, it looks awesome as hell.
And, you have to collect a few batteries to power this teleporter, and there's only one in the environment, but you realize if you take a picture of the battery and then turn sideways and like set the picture into the world, you can walk into the picture and grab a second battery. Like I think they're really making the most of that mechanic. I don't know if that much is going to change other than the picture stuff, but yeah.
The demo got me hyped for it. Also hype is the fact that BX Latino Heat just subbed for the 10th month. Thank you, Latino Heat. Always good seeing you in chat, hanging out with us. Thank you for the sub.
Thank you.
But yeah, Viewfinder, that game is
my gaping butthole.
Cool as hell.
Yep. I'd never heard of it before y'all started talking about it. I started Googling it, and like I was like, what am I seeing here? This looks really cool and insane. And Joe, your description with the bridge helps me kind of... I can see how the pictures sort of line up with the environment like that, and it makes what I'm looking at a little more sense. But I gotta try this on PC, like,
yeah,
ASAP.
It is, as the kids would say, hella based, I think.
Excuse me?
I have
Excuse
me, what? To this day, I have no idea what that means. What the hell
me
is based?
I don't know.
I've seen it used in one context, and I was like, okay, I finally get it. And they'll get used in a different context. I'm like, wait, so you basically say a thing that you know is going to piss people off, but you stand by it? That makes it based? Or
I know what,
is it?
It's supposed to mean good, I guess.
Yeah, it's I thought really it kind of did. but that's just, I just have no idea.
I know what it means, but I didn't realize people are still using the word hella.
Yeah, they're not. I didn't want to say anything, but they're not. But they are saying base.
Is that an adjective that is still up in the parlance?
If it's like really, really, if it's really based, right? It's hella based.
It's like hella based. Do y'all read Akewood? I think you read some Akewood back in the day.
I read some, yeah.
They would just say heck of instead of hella, and that really, that stuck with me. That's popped up in a couple of my reviews.
I do like that. I also like hells of.
Hells of, I haven't heard that variant.
I heard it in a Sum 41 video, but it stuck with me.
Classic.
Like, yeah. And, like everybody else was saying hella, and I was like, I kind of like hells of. It sounds more formal.
Yeah,
it does. It's proper,
Mr. Hellzub.
Exactly. Please, Hellzub was my father's name.
Hella.
You may call me Hella. Anyway,
but yeah, Viewfinder looks up. What's everyone else been up to?
Oh, sorry, I just don't know if you're playing other demos from the from any of this demo fest.
I haven't played any demos. I know, like, everything they hype up is mostly PC. And I'm not much of a demo player to begin with, because 90% of the time you play a demo and then you got to replay it. Like, it's not a new special slice of the game or a remixed portion of the game to give you a feeling for things. It's just like the first hour of a game, and then you get the game and you play it, and the first hour you're like, I did this shit already.
Yeah. What's the climbing game from Summer Games Fest? What was that one called? Start with a J.
Jusant.
I played that demo was out last week. I don't know if it's still up, but I played it was pretty great.
I loved it.
I climbed a lot. I will say I don't have a fear of heights, but they are Rick really. I think, you know, you get a little woozy when you're looking off the Hancock building, but nothing severe. And man, there are some sequences that are really, like, there's some swinging involved and it's nuts. So yeah, I
want to play that game in VR.
Oh geez. Oh man,
My buddy Jeremy was up hanging out, and he played the Horizon game on PSVR2, and he was climbing in the one section. It was like, what happens if you just let go? And he's like, we'll find out. And he let go, and he just screamed because he thought he was falling for real.
Oh, that's amazing,
dude!
it was pretty fun. VR is fun at parties.
You have a PSVR2?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yep,
didn't know you grabbed one.
Yeah, come on over, hang out sometime.
I want to come over and buy that horror game for you. The one that does the eye tracking.
Oh geez.
You know what I'm talking about? You can't. It's like it's the guys who made the same. It's like they made that Until Dawn shooter for the first PSVR. They made another one. And it's kind of like a, you know, on rails thing, but I think you go in a room with mannequins, and if you blink, they move. Yeah, right.
That's amazing.
Oh. Okay, yeah.
I watched some guys play it.
You blink, you die.
Dude, so scary.
I watched some dudes stream it, and they're like, oh, I keep blinking. Like, you're trying not to blink, you know? And
Jesus.
Wow. Nice.
Good idea.
I think I have that one, actually, but I didn't see the mannequin part yet.
Get back in there. Stream it.
that's like those angel statues in the Doctor Who show.
Yes, exactly.
Totally. I sound like somebody who doesn't know what Doctor Who is.
I appreciated that.
I watched, like, I don't know, however many seasons there's been since 2007, and I'm all over here like, oh yeah, that Doctor Who show I hear that people like.
I'm looking next to me, and Simon is just giving me sad eyes. He was at the vet today.
No.
Because he had a bite on his, like, rear hindquarter, and it was getting infected. So we had to take him to the vet, and he has a big shaved patch, and he had to get the abscess drained, and he's on medicine and all this other stuff. And he's just been laying on my lap all day with a donut around his neck. Just the poor guy. I just want to snuggle him.
Yeah.
Kitty.
Poor Simon. My buddy. He is my snuggle buddy.
Don't bite your cats, Joe.
It wasn't me. I swear this time.
Wasn't me this time.
Sure. I promise. We got a bunch of reviews we should take care of. Should we get to those?
What? Okay.
Or did someone else have anything they wanted to chat about from the past weekend?
Oh, I just wanted to briefly shout out Etrian Odyssey HD Remaster for coming out and being amazing.
Whoa. And
awesome.
Also perfectly demonstrating like how DS can be translated to Switch in like a modern way. So like they did a real good job with it. I'm about a few hours into the first game and I'm like, ah yeah, it's good.
What was the second screen used for mostly in the
So Etrian Odyssey, very famously, one screen was the first person dungeon crawler bit, and the bottom screen, the touch screen, you would draw your map in real time with the with what you were doing, like old graph paper style. But you know, you draw a line and it would, you know, lock in place, and you could drag over little icons and stuff like that. In the Switch version, you can toggle that. You can go to a full screen mode of just the dungeon, or when you're ready and there's like a little window of your map, or when you want to like actually access the map, you just push like the X button. And then if you're on touchscreen in handheld mode, you can use the touchscreen exactly as it was on the DS. Or now there's a control scheme for laying that track down.
That's cool.
So yeah, way cool.
Smart.
Yeah, and it's remastered, but without like really changing it. Like it's Yuzo Koshiro's soundtracks that he recreated himself, but still using the FM synths and stuff like that he put on the DS. Not like reorchestrating it or going with like a higher sample MIDI or something like that. Like it's still the same way. It's just clearer and brighter now. So. Yeah,
sweet.
I bought the physical version from PlayAsia because it didn't come out in the U.S. But if it does, I'm buying it again. So yeah, I've got
the other ones. Don't you have the original ones too?
I've got all of them. Yeah, I've got every Etrian Odyssey that's released in the U.S., which is six mainline games and two remakes and a side game called Etrian Mystery Dungeon, which is just a mystery dungeon game like any of them are.
So like, basically, for someone who is in the same boat aside from that, do you feel as though, in an economic sense, that the HD collection is worth it if you are sitting on the DS titles and they're still functioning? Especially with the whole one screen versus two screen bit now.
Well, I mean, it depends on the person. Are you still playing your DS? Are you still wanting to put in a Etrian Odyssey cartridge that you have and start adventuring when you got your Switch right here?
I do still play my DS. I carry that, my Vita, and my Switch.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the aesthetic upgrade is really awesome, but I mean, it's the same game. It's not a... But, I mean, for folks who are getting into it for the first time, this is... the way to play it, because I mean Etrian Odyssey 3 alone is like $200 now.
Jeez.
I know they're worth money. At least some of them are.
Yeah, and so, there's no eShop to get your back there, so if you're not pirating them, this is the way to play them, and thank God it's a great way to play them.
And we don't condone piracy on the show.
Not at all, even though they did not supply me with these games for review, and here I am reviewing it for free. So who's getting stuff for free, Atlas? Who's getting stuff for free?
Pernell,
I did request. I didn't hear back on it.
Yeah, that's fine.
I tried.
Hear about Pernell, what happened?
Also, did not hear on Final Fantasy, so don't worry about that one either.
Brooke was talking.
Okay, sorry. Brooke was.
That's all right. Brooke's always talking. It's always going to be. Pernell, are we the only two Vita owners? I wonder in the group and the SML team at large, because I play visual novels on this thing still. So just curious.
I thought Joe used to have one at least, and maybe sold it.
Mine, yeah, I think Tim still has.
You know what else he sold?
Did it show
Seamless
up?
Segue. Yeah,
What else did I sell, Brooke? I think you got a new toy over the weekend.
Before we move on to reviews, I did have some very big personal news to share. Might be even bigger news than Etrian Odyssey. I am now an Xbox owner and user. Yeah. I'm one of the cool kids.
Nice.
I'm like official SNL head now. And I really appreciate just that I have one game for Xbox now and a Story of Seasons. So that's going to
had to nice. Do it.
So good. Yeah, we but yeah, it works great. It's awesome. I'm super excited about it. I'm holding the controller gently right now. Beautiful white.
Gently.
So gently. Easy. It's so light.
It is, isn't it? It's such
so ergonomic.
Such a cute little concise controller. Everything is just there. It doesn't overload you with a touch screen or lights on the top. I don't know. I'm not a fan of the PS5 controller. It's shaped better, but I don't like all the extra features.
I don't like the D-pad.
Just want a friggin' controller. I really want adaptive triggers. I don't care about adaptive triggers. They're annoying. Just want to pull a trigger to shoot a gun, not feel resistance as if I'm actually pulling the trigger of the gun being held to the person's. Like, don't put me in those shoes.
See, I don't mind the not from that lot the way you're describing it, mind you, but I don't mind those adaptive triggers per se because they've never gotten in the way of my games. It's just, oh look, ooh, a little bit of pushback on the button. I can appreciate that. I feel like, and personally for me, I feel like with this gen, I haven't really had a situation where I felt like one was in any way really quote unquote better, with the exception being that I'm still used to how the Xbox controllers hold, because whereas PlayStation continues to change the way their controllers look and the shape and all that within reason, Xbox has been consistent over the last few gens, and I say that in a good way because I felt that the 360 had a good controller setup. Xbox One was like, okay, here's that controller, but like it's a little, I guess it had a little more heft to it. And now this one, it's got this weird like gritty finish, which makes it more comfortable to hold, if you can believe it. Like it's the same shape, the same button layout, except for, with the exception of that one, like I guess like image button they have on here, whatever reason it's there.
The share button.
That's a share button. Okay, yeah. I never press it, so I was like, it must be a screen cap or something.
You never touch it? That's amazing. What? Most people accidentally hit that thing constantly.
it's accidental. Yeah. I'm like, what am I sharing with anybody? Nobody cares what I'm talking about.
I care.
But I appreciate that, friend. I appreciate that also, friend. Yeah, but like I never share stuff. I mean, like every once in a while, like when I have to write a review, the only time I really take screenshots, cause I'll take the screenshots just to dump them on the Facebook so I can put them in WordPress later. But for the most part, I never share stuff really, which makes me sad because every once in a while I've tried. Like I remember playing like Robbie Reeve. I was like, oh, this is a cool boss fight that was really challenging. I should take a video of that. And then you share it, nobody gives a crap. Like whatever. I'm not playing that game, so I don't understand why you would be interested in doing well in it. But
I digress. Take a lot the of point videos I was making while I play Super Mega Baseball 4, because when you hit the ball just right and flies back at the pitcher and cracks him in the face and they drop, you got to take a screenshot. Got to take a video. It's just too good not to.
Those are the moments, you know.
Screen grab.
I made use of the record view the last 3 minutes of footage feature that Xbox has in the review that I have today. So I'll explain that when we get there.
Ooh, nice.
I will say that I really want that Starfield controller. That thing looks rad. It does. But I have the Horizon one, which I love. It's like bright magenta and yellow and translucent. It's amazing. I don't need to like collect controllers. That's just stupid. So I have
the Forza one too. It is so nice.
It's my favorite.
I also have the Stellar Shift. That's the one that like from one angle it's blue, from another angle it's purple. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's the
worst part about these nice controllers, because I never have multiplayer, but I always end up having a situation where one is the default controller. Second controller ends up being like somebody else is like, oh yeah, maybe we should get a controller to play multiplayer, and then it never happens. And then the last controller is basically they started releasing the color ones. Like, oh, cool, this one looks nice, and I get it on sale. So I just ended up with a bunch of controllers I never use. I have like four sets of Joy-Cons. I've only used one of them. Two Pro controllers. I've never used either one of them.
I just had to buy a Switch Pro controller because I want to play Zelda, but the screen's too small for me. I need a Pro controller to play on TV. And
I'm almost the opposite lately. I'm amazed people can do that. Like, I play games, and something about my eyes with the bigger TVs lately and the way they're set up, I feel more comfortable staring at a smaller screen where everything's kind of right there. I'm kind of like waffling between getting a freaking mega size TV and stick with my current one, because I'm worried I'm gonna get this big TV and not be unable to stare at it. Well, I don't know yet. I haven't figured out what this is.
I need a mega TV.
Mega V. Like, one of my friends got like a 70-inch TV. I'm like, that would be cool. Yeah. You're just playing Pokemon on it.
I want to play open world game on one of those bad boys. That would blow my mind.
Car games are really good on the big boys. Love a good burnout session on a 70-inch television.
Rock Band on an 85-inch screen. That's what I want.
Oh my God. That'd be intense.
Just be Skyrim for me.
The future is here.
Like, just gonna play the game I normally play.
Well, anyway, should we get to the reviews?
All right.
Now we all get the.
I'm gonna be here for moral support.
Welcome to the Xbox family. Add me as a friend so I can remain appearing offline, and we'll never play anything together. But you should still be my friend.
That's a deal. Drop your. Is your username just Stimage?
I believe it is.
Cool. I'm gonna find you.
Mine's Joe Cannon. You should add me too.
I didn't think about that, actually.
Although you should have had my gamer tag because I was on the system.
Good point.
I'll send you mine later on or something. You're going to just be adding everybody to this thing today. Look
Heck
out.
Yeah.
You're going to have so many friends.
Aw, finally.
Hey. You're popular, McGee.
All right, I'm be in the background supporting y'all. Good luck with the reviews.
All right, well, first game to talk about tonight is Miasma Chronicles, developed by the Bearded Ladies, published by 505 Games, released May 23rd on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $49.99. From the creators of Mutant Year Zero, Road to Eden comes a beautifully crafted tactical adventure you won't forget. Embark on a quest across a post-apocalyptic wasteland torn apart by brutal force known only as the Miasma. For now, what is going on in Miasma Chronicles?
You already took the line of by the creators of Mutant Year Zero, which was a game I did like playing. And as a result, I was interested in what this one had to offer. And I'm honestly pleased with it. And considering I played the original Mutant Year Zero on the Switch, playing this on an Xbox is I get to see what they're capable of as far as visuals in a better way, because this game looks really nice. But as it was with Mutant Year Zero, this game is a tactical, RPG in that sort, where you are tasked with trying to locate, as the character Elvis and his brother Diggs, his brother being a robot, refitted from a mining robot, is tasked with trying to locate Elvis's mother, who disappeared years ago, leaving behind for Elvis a mysterious glove and a message saying, learn how to use this glove. Use it to basically, control the work through the Miasma, and then come find me, because the Miasma is all across the country, and in different areas it creates barriers preventing people from pressing onward beyond said barriers. So you are tasked with going through the process of finding her, figuring out what's going on with the Miasma, of course, and also another entity that exists in this world called the First Family, which exists as basically being the oligarch of the environment. Do as we say, pay your tribute or die or whatever, you know the gist. But that's the narrative. The narrative is cool, and the voices in this game are actually pretty nice, too. It's a good setup, but then again, Year Zero had that done, too, so I had no worries that they would pull that off. But the gameplay is where I think the shine is. If you've never played Mutant Year Zero, I'll describe it, but if you have played Mutant Year Zero, just consider it to be that game's combat with a few more added tweaks, which are kind of nice. But for those who aren't familiar, you are essentially you're running around on a typical grid map. Think like if you were playing like Fallout 2 back in the day, but you actually had full movement and not clicking from space to space. You're moving around on that map. I love how I went that far back to come up with an example, as if other games like, Divinity didn't exist or some crap. But anyway, you're moving around the map, walking around, exploring, finding objects you can pick up that are pretty much consumables or you know, messages that you can read to get the idea of the environment you're in, and new weapons you can equip. But eventually you'll come across a scenario where you have to get down and dirty, you know, skirmish. And in this situation, you are tasked with taking one, you or up to three players, not three players, but like three characters, if you eventually get that set up a party, to not just start the battle, but you kind of have to position yourselves in such a way that you can trigger an ambush and catch the enemies by surprise. You're going to want to do that with every battle that gives you the opportunity, because you need strategic advantage in this game. They don't screw around, because once the battle kicks in, all the enemies are going to be alerted. They're going to be trying to scout you out. They're going to try to see you dead. And placement of characters ends up involving putting them behind walls or tree stumps or anything you can find to work as either half cover or full cover. Cover being a way to reduce damage that comes in your way and also makes it harder for you to be hit in general. Once you get a player moving, once you start playing, all your characters get two action points. You can use them to do a variety of things, just move around the map to get better placement, use your guns to attack back, but then of course you eventually get other abilities as well, such as like, you know, blast ammo, armor, shots that like allow you to hit multiple enemies at once, or an overcast, which allows you to hit enemies as they run through your line of sight. It's Overwatch, I'm sorry. They run through your line of sight. And a variety of other cool things that may use one or both of your action points. And depending on the character, they'll get different types of things, which will allow you to, you know, choose which characters are best suited for a different situation. But you'll be using all these things in tandem to try to keep yourself from getting your ass handed to you by a variety of crazy creatures and monsters that exist in this world. Because one thing I like about this game is the fact that the premise is mainly about environmentalism. We pretty much screwed up our planet. The planet said, "I hate you," and now it's doing things with the intent being to wreck us. So mutant animals and mutant plants, and of course the occasional jackass human too, but you're basically dealing with like mutated wildlife and plant life. And I'm here for it. Not to mention the fact that you're exploring a decimated United States. And they come up with some really goofy stories sometimes about our old history. Like, they come across an old museum that has, dinosaur holograms, and they believe that humans battled them in a great war years ago, when, of course, that didn't happen. But it's funny to hear the characters think that's what happened in history regarding prehistoric life. But, yeah, you're basically battling these creatures, and that ends up being a good time, and that's in and of itself. Like, I love the combat in this game. You might find yourself occasionally feeling like, oh man, another setup where I gotta set up my ambush, but hey, pace yourself. If you feel as though you're getting a little drudged out, take your freaking time. But the characters themselves also, in addition to like their different abilities, they also can get access to new guns, which you can equip two of per character, which allows you to kind of not only diversify which guns or what type of guns you want to use during a situation, but also reloading in this game is an action. If you reload at the wrong time, you might find yourself in a crappy situation. So every once in a while, you might find yourself go, "Cool, good thing I still have bullets in my other inferior gun, so I can take that kill shot and then worry about reloading later." You can equip these guns with different mods to make them, you know, decked out as ammo modifiers and typical weapon modifiers. You know, increase damage types, increase crit damage types, increase range of shot, all kinds of cool stuff like that. Power cores are things that I can consider to be replicants of ammo, or not ammo, but armor in this game, because that's how you get, like, your variety of different, like, buffs and stuff that would come normally from armor, whether it moves your, increases your defense or increases your, like, mobility, stuff like that. And some characters also get something called miasma powers. Mainly your main character with that glove, but eventually other characters can get them too. And miasma powers are sort of the one of the main MacGuffins in the game, because as you move around, you're looking for miasma vortexes, which you can absorb into a glove, and that gives you more power, eventually allowing you to press onward on your mission. But you also get abilities from that, and those abilities are sort of like the magic in this game, and you get some pretty nifty ones that can also be modified to do, you know, have like various augmentation tweaks to them as well. And quite frankly, I find that to be fun to use too. The magic points are in this game are pretty much like electricity or kilowatts. So you have to use like energy cells to recharge that, as opposed to ether in a Final Fantasy game. I like this game. I like it a bit. like it a good bit. I like the voices. I like the music, even though the music is more so just like atmospheric in the sense that dugga-da-dugga-da-dugga-da-dugga. But I do think this game is solid. I feel as though, I don't want to go so far to say it's like it's just better than Mutant Year Zero, because plot-wise, that could go either way. But I do feel as though gameplay-wise, it is more of the same with some additions that I like more. Like, I like the idea of having the miasma powers. And I think the only thing I wish is that I wish one of my characters was a warthog, like in the last game. But unfortunately, that's not even unfortunate, but instead I get a really cool mining robot that speaks Jive, so I'm cool with that too.
Here's a question for you. I'm a fan of the real-time exploration, not so much the tactical combat. Is there any kind of assist to make it easier on me to get into this game, or am I kind of just SOL if the premise seems cool, but the gameplay is not for me?
Well, I know. Give me a sec. I'll even check to make sure. Maybe they'll let me switch it here so I can see if it's still there. Because I know there are difficulty settings, of course, ranging from narrative, which is likely the, hey, do you want to get through this with as little, you know, adversity as possible? Select narrative. Yeah. But then there's standard difficulty, which is what I play on, and then extreme, because I ain't touching that shit because I ain't trying to cry so much. But in addition to that, I know there was something that I can't change in here. I should have probably written it down. But it's an option for like full tactical and semi-tactical. And I know one of the things related to that is that, well, I want to say it's with semi-tactical, you can't miss a shot. But I think that may go both ways. I didn't want that. I want the ability to have misses because sometimes I want the enemies to miss me too because I'm not a fool. But it is there for people who don't want to care about, you know, oh man, he's in my line of sight, but at the same time, he's too far away to have 100%. Oh no, if he's like way away, but he's in your line of sight, with that mode, you still get full, you know, accuracy and stuff like that. At least that's the vibe I got from when I read the description for it. But what I'm doing is not that. So they do have things in place for you to mess around and work. And of course, there's always save scumming if you want to get down to that business too.
Yeah.
I will say one thing I noticed as an annoyance, it might be the way I set the game, but when you pause the game, right, not the menu for showing, you know, browsing your character stats and stuff, but the actual pause button that lets you save, load, whatever, it is really hard for me to see what I have selected. Again, it might be how I set it up at the beginning. Maybe they did one of those brightness settings or what have you. But it is freaking hard to see what I'm selecting on that first menu. If they could just, I don't know, give it, like let's say, for example, I scroll down to settings, right? Once you select settings, the list on that has a black background with the text, and you can see a bar going up and down based on what you've highlighted. They should do that for the main pause menu, too. Because I kid you not, every time I pause the game, I have to count in my head how many spaces I've moved. To know what I'm picking. I've never played a game where I had to do that before. Ever. It is really weird. I don't know what's up. But otherwise, the game is cool. I think it's a great title.
Well, it is $49.99. What is your verdict?
I think it's worth picking up. It's a fun time. Explore the United States today in a brand new way with mutants and frogs and demons galore.
Nice. Well, it's on my wish list, so I'll have to keep an eye on it.
Quick question before we move to the next one. What's a MacGuffin?
A MacGuffin? I feel like that's just me saying weird crap.
Okay, love it, love it.
I'm not even going to lie. I feel like that's me saying weird crap because
awesome.
A MacGuffin could be... Oh, Chris, my man, go for it.
A MacGuffin is a physical object in a story around which a plot is based. So,
so I wasn't all
a magic land. Hell yeah! You know,
I'm going to ask you this, Chris. I got to ask this because I feel like this is where I come from in a lot of the stuff I say. Have you ever noticed how sometimes you'll pick up what something is from context of someone else using it, but you never actively had to define it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Like bussin'.
I'm Chris, by the way.
Bussin'.
Dude, that's so real.
All right. Busted. Anyway, we're moving on. Next game to talk about is Killer Frequency, developed and published by Team 17, released June 1st on Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Killer Frequency is a first-person horror puzzle game set in 1987 that puts you in the role of a late-night radio talk show host in a small-town America whose callers are being stalked by a mysterious killer. Grant, tell us about your time with Killer Frequency.
Yeah,
which should be the name of your next album, but
it's sure done. I'm sure no one else has done that. Has anyone else done? I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah, so one of my favorite horror movies of the last 15 years or so is this movie called Pontypool, and it is a story that takes place inside of this radio station. There's only two actors in this film, and it's basically the story of the DJ and the producer, you know, going about their business, broadcasting for the evening, and then they get a very strange call. And let's just say things ramp up, but you never leave the radio station. All of the environmental storytelling, all of the stuff that's going on in the world are all told through phone calls into the station. It's quite effective because it lets you tell a really big story in a really small setting. It's almost like, you know, you end up visualizing in your head what's going on in the world, and a lot of that can end up being more horrific than you know it might be if they just showed stuff on the screen. So I really like that film, and you guys should check it out if you haven't. Is Pontypool, Pontypool, and I was like, this is Pontypool the game. Right, maybe, I don't know. And so I it turns out that one of the people that call in the most over the course of the evening is from Ponty's Pizza. So I have a feeling these guys knew exactly what they were doing when they put this game together. So if they're listening, I gotcha. I'm with you. I'm on board. So yeah, you play a DJ. It's a first person game. Interact with your producer a bit, and then you can like put records on to play music. It's all custom music for the game. You can put cassettes in the cassette player to play advertisements. There's a soundboard. There's a mixing console where you can turn stuff up and down. It controls like it was made for PC. So if you can imagine, you know, right stick aiming at little buttons on a device can get a little fiddly if you're doing a console, but you do get used to it. So yeah, what happens is you end up getting a call from the local police, and you know, without spoiling anything, you sort of become the 911 station for the evening. And so you're getting calls from people that are in distress or are concerned. There's a bit of mystery involved. There are times where you're literally juggling two different things that you're in your hands. One might be a map because you're trying to give them information about where they should or should not go. There's like notes about personalities of people that might be calling. There's like instruction manuals you might have to get. You do have to leave the booth. You go into the rest of the radio station to get things you might need to solve the kinds of puzzles they throw at you. But they do what they set out to do in terms of creating a world that is outside that room. Like there is a lot going on in this little town. And there is a killer on the loose. He's called the Whistling Man. And it's all about trying to save as many people as possible over the course of the evening. You're trying to get through the night. So that's the setup for the game. It's a very pretty game. It's not a very big building, but they really did capture the late 80s vibe of a radio station. It's fun to just kind of walk around, look at fake concert posters, pick up magazines and see stuff. So they really nailed that. I ran into some problems with it in this game, some like big technical issues. I've written a lot of them down, and I actually contacted the developer to share some of this stuff because some of it was pretty bad. What can happen is that there's a problem you have to solve. You have to leave the radio booth to go perhaps get items you might need, get information you might need to solve a problem. But what can happen, let's just say three times over the course of this game, you can come back into the room without everything that you need, and then it queues up the next sequence, but you don't have, and you know you don't have everything you need. You haven't finished like searching for stuff or dropping stuff on the floor and trying to leave. But the game does this thing where it will stop you from leaving a room if it thinks you haven't done everything you need to do in that room. And so it prevents you from traveling all the time all over the radio station. But what could happen is you can go back to the booth and never not be able to leave again. You won't be able to leave and go get the stuff you need. And then the producer will start talking about items that like, but it doesn't make any sense because it's nothing you've found. It's nothing that you've actually collected. So she might be talking about people or that thing you see on the paper. And I'm like, I got no paper and I'm not allowed to leave the room to go get the paper. So there were several instances of things sort of triggering out of order. I will say that I did have to reload my save two or three times to get some events to trigger in order, all very sort of technical buggy stuff. And there are other things like the producer will sort of scream a pile of information at you, stuff you might need, like, you know, just so you know, Kate lives at the end of Water Street on the west side. She's 35 years old. She's probably going to be pretty nimble. But John lives up near the water tower up on Juniper. And then Chris lives down on the other end of town at the corner of 5th and something. And it's like, check the map and see what, you know, see who we should pick to do something. And you're like, okay, you just gave me a lot of information. You go to the map. There's no way to get her to restate what she said. None of that information is written down. So twice in this game, I used the Xbox video feature to go back and actually figure out what the heck she said. Like it's a little. I mean, I should at least be able to have a dialogue option that says, can you state what you said again? Because when you started rambling, I had no idea that this is going to be something I'd have to put to memory at that moment.
I didn't have a pen and paper ready. Like, come on. Yeah. Give me a heads up.
Exactly. There are a couple other things, like when you're standing at the booth doing your work, there's a sort of a designated place for all the dialogue options to pop up, but there's no audio cue that window has popped up. So you might be looking at somewhere else in the room, and then a dialogue option has popped up in 3D over by your booth, but you don't see it. And if it's a timed thing where you need to answer something in time, you're not gonna know that there's something that you need to answer. So things like that, some quality of life hiccups, or some massive triggers. I did finish the game. It really went some interesting places. It had some fun twists, but there are some things in this game that really kept me from enjoying myself. The last thing I'll mention is that there's some stuff you have to do in another office in the building, and there are intercoms all over the building so you can continue to talk to your producer. Well, I finished what I needed to finish, and I was like, sweet, we're great. Save the day. I went back to the booth and like she wouldn't talk to me. Like I was pushing the button. She wouldn't say anything. I thought I might have hit like a something game breaking. Turns out I had to go back to the office that I was in and hit the intercom from there. And then she would talk to me. And so, but it wouldn't stop me from leaving the room like it normally does. So like, there's just a lot of things like that were a bit frustrating. So, I really feel like overall they captured the vibe that they were going for. I think they wove a pretty good story together, but there were some gamey things that really got in my way, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, it's $24.99. What do you think for that price?
What I would say, I feel like this is an incredibly unique game. I would stick this on your wish list. And if you come across it in a couple months, check and see when the last time it was updated. I want to get these guys' notes. The game did just come out. Hopefully they're working on some stuff and there's some things that are being reported to try and fix this game. If I had not run into these fundamental bug tracking, like this is stuff that just gets fixed when you make games. If this stuff had not been a problem, it would be an absolute recommend, especially if you're a horror fan and a fan of the late 80s and stuff like that. But at the moment, I just can't say it's worth the 25 bones, but keep an eye on it because I hope they fix this stuff up and I hope they do another one because I feel like they had some really good ideas there.
Cool. So add it to a wish list, I guess, and keep an eye on it for now.
Yeah, add it to a wish list and you're going to stumble into it later when you see it. You know, check and see if they've updated it. Like, see if there's any patch notes or anything. See if they fixed some of these problems. And if they get the game to that point, absolutely worth a play.
Cool. And what did you say the villain was? The Whistling Man?
The Whistling Man.
Dale North's mortal enemy.
Oh, can he not whistle?
He hates whistling so much.
He hates whistling. That's hilarious. Well, then I'm going to recommend it specifically to Dale North. Forget the wish list. Just go buy this game and please report back.
Sounds good. That's it for you, Grant. You sticking around or are you heading out?
Yeah, I'll hang out.
Cool. All right, next up, Evil Wizard, developed by Rubber Duck Games, published by eHome Entertainment, Released May 25th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $19.99, Evil Wizard is a humor-filled action RPG that puts you in the shoes of a former final boss. Rise from defeat, rediscover long-lost powers, and fight to reclaim your castle from an army of so-called heroes. Purnell, tell us about your time with Evil Wizard.
I feel like after Rack and Ruin and now this, I should just kind of acknowledge that games that have you play as a former final boss slash wizard-looking character who decides they want to take over or defeat the heroes, it's an excellent action RPG, are winners for me, because I wasn't interested in this at first until I started playing it, and then time went by, and I was like, wow, this is actually pretty fun. I'm digging this game. I think maybe a lot of what I'm starting to appreciate about these games, as long as they're crafted well, of course, is the humor that stems from them, because it always ends up being like these characters, like this guy here, he is a wizard who's evil, hence the title, who gets ejected.
All right.
He gets ejected from his castle by a hero alliance who set forth to take him out. And then we very quickly make your way back to said castle, but the throne room where you were originally at and where you were defeated at is now sealed up. The heroes that defeated you never left that room, and now you need to make your way back inside, reclaim your castle, and also make it into the throne room to take what's yours. So your game exists of you pretty much exploring the environments around your castle. And your basic kit is you have access to a melee attack, and you have a magic wand. Now, the cool thing about the magic wand in this game is that it's just as much an attack tool as it is a puzzle tool. Because the way magic in this game works is that you have to walk up to a general object. Let's say, for example, a flame, right? You walk up to the flame, and then you channel the flame to acquire fire magic. You don't have an MP gauge, which I very much appreciate. It's just a cooldown meter. So once you have fire magic, you're just throwing, you throw a fireball, it cools down, you throw a fireball, it cools down, you throw a fireball again. And you'd have this magic until you need to get another spell. Originally, you only have access to fire magic, but as you play the game and defeat certain bosses and basically fulfill various events, you'll get access to more magic spells that consists of five different elements, which can eventually then be mixed and matched as well. But you'll be able to attribute those equip spells as needed. Initially, just one, but you'll be able to increase the slots of that too. And then you'll be able to use multiple spells. And you'll be taking the spells from various locations and using them in other locations to solve puzzles. Like, for example, you might come across a situation where you see a raging fire and there is a grate nearby. You can go to a nearby body of water, freeze it to make a iceberg, kind of make a shell, rock, a block of ice come off of the waterfall, then push the block of ice over a grate, light it on fire so that it melts, and then all the water runs down and douses the fire. So fun little puzzles like that. I'm a big sucker for that kind of thing. And when it's time to get down and dirty with the combat, there's a lot of fun to be had there too, because as you fight enemies, and there are a fair number of them, and sometimes they'll mix and match them in a way that can make them pretty damn annoying, such as the chef who throws fireballs, while you're also being attacked by the ice golem that actually tries to freeze you in place, jerkbag. You will be pretty much tasked with attacking with your melee weapon or your magic. Now, if you attack a guy with a fireball multiple times to the point where he dies, he's going to be incinerated. He's just dead, because you freaking burned him alive. Jesus Christ. But if you happen to stab him to death, before he dies, you might get a situation where he's kind of begging for his life, at which point you can walk up to him and hit the right bumper button, I believe, and you can absorb his life and get healed. That's the primary mechanic for healing in this game, too. Of course, when you attempt to do that, you are left kind of vulnerable to the opposition, so you don't want to just be willy-nilly grabbing people and trying to suck out their soul essence, because if you're not careful, you'll get waylaid while you're doing that. But there's a nice fine dance between dashing, slashing, bashing, and soul harvesting to keep yourself, you know, up and running in this game. And I like that about it. And of course, as you're doing that too, you'll come across people in the game that like were former minions of yours who have been defeated by the heroes and locked away or kidnapped or what have you. And you need to rescue those people. And as you rescue them, you'll gain access to various aspects of, you know, improvement, or, you know, I guess they'll stick with improvement that they can give you. So, like, the most important, which took me way too long to find, because I'll get to that part, the reasoning behind that in a little bit, but it took me way too long to find her. But once you find her, you're able to spend, you know, soul, you know, bloodstone energy that you've harvested from kills to upgrade your gear and get, you know, more attack power, the aforementioned ability to carry more spells around at one time, and so on and so forth, more heart containers and the like. But you want to try to save as many people as you can. If you come across somebody, you're going to save them because you're going to get something good out of it. You can also get one guy, he has, which I see kind of find humorously, I should post this for you later to share, but the way that he helps you is he's collecting rubber duckies. Because he's obsessed with rubber ducks. And I guess the company's name is Rubber Duck, which is, well, I guess that's why they did it. So you run around, and these rubber ducks are, like, sealed with talismans. So you don't know what they are. But when you take them to him, he unseals them, and he shows you what he's got in his collection. And all the rubber ducks are, like, various themes and humorous things. Like, they're, like, a solid snake rubber duck. Or a Duxona rubber duck, which is basically Joker from Persona 5 with all the, you know, the gun, attack, Duxona, like pokes sticking off the side, which I loved. And I took a picture. I was like, oh, man, I got to share this when I'm allowed to. But I do enjoy the humor of the different rubber ducks you find in Access. this game, it works. Like, I feel like the one issue I've had, and it might just be because it's just me being me, but you get to the point where you might have trouble remembering what you were doing in certain areas, and you don't really have, like, say, a map that you can access through your menu and just go, oh, I'm going to go there. But, like, let me rephrase that. You have access to a map, but you don't have, it's like a quest log or something like that. So I'm like, what the heck am I supposed to be doing? Like, I forgot what I was doing. You're like, well, you just better freaking remember, or just wander around till you stumble across what you need to do. There are likely people you can talk to that will tell you what they wanted you to do, but you got to remember to go to those people and talk to them. Though the game isn't, like, freaking massive. So, I mean, worst case scenario, you can find a warp portal and warp back to the main hub, and then you're like, okay, I'll get back on track from there. But when you're out and about, you're just kind of wandering until you come across what you need to, which is pretty much how I progressed through much of my time with the game. But it doesn't mean I dislike it. I like wandering around. I like finding new stuff, and I like, I don't know, locating secrets and realizing I can freeze water all of a sudden, which makes me want to go back to a place. So this game works. One more thing I should mention, too. I've said this about a lot of games back in the day, and I'm going to say it about this one, too. I didn't think the game had a visual flair when I saw stills. Didn't say it was ugly, but it didn't really pop for me. But seeing the game in motion changes that. It's very fluid animation. The characters have a lot of personality to them. I like the game. I like the way it looks. I like the presentation it provides. It's just good stuff. And if it weren't for this show, I would have likely missed out on it. So hopefully, if anybody's hearing this, they might not make the same mistake I did and manage to actually, you know, pick up the game themselves. Because I think this game is worth being played. And also go back after you beat this one and play Rack and Ruin, because that's another game that I think a lot of people slept on.
Well, this one's $20. What do you say?
Easy recommendation.
Cool.
Buy it. That's cool. The show says to do.
Yep. Okay. Works for me. Next up, Brain Show, developed and published by Simplicity Games, released June 7th on Switch and Steam for $14.99. Compete with your friends in a brand new quiz game. Take part in a crazy TV show. Dynamite explosions, sobbing mates, ruined friendships. Sounds like fun. It will be with Brain Show. Chris, tell us about your time playing Brain Show.
Okay, Brain Show. So this is a multiplayer. Seems to be, yeah, maybe developed by one person kind of thing. But yeah, it is a quiz show type of, like, yeah, it's like, it's a game show that is centered around quizzes and stuff. And basically, yeah, you just answer trivia questions in various ways to get through. So this is it's a little bit weird. For one, it is multiplayer only. There's absolutely no single player anything. You got to have two people at least and definitely recommended to have more. It works with up to 8. And the other thing is that
so no AI players at all. It's strictly
no AI players. Right? No. Yeah, no AI players. None of that. So basically you go to like a menu, an interface, and you choose, you know, one of two modes, play or quick game. And I'll get to those in just a second, but I just got to shout out the control scheme. So it only works with Joy-Cons, right? And it only works with, one at a time. So, you know, just one Joy-Con per person. That's the only interface. No pro controller, no touchscreen, no portable mode or anything like that, pretty much. So unless, you know, you detach the Joy-Cons and use them that way, you can play it in portable mode that way. And yeah, shout outs to the controls. It makes the Z triggers, the confirmation button and the plus and minus buttons, AKA the hardest ones to like really mess with, the back buttons. For no reason. Wow. It's not how the actual game is played. I thought, okay, so it's going to be like a buzzer thing, like Jeopardy. Like, you know, you got to hold it in your hand and like push it down with your thumb so that you can like get there first. No, that's not how it is at all. Okay. So, yeah, once you play, you set up a profile of, you know, like I said, one to eight people, but, you know, two to eight people, but no less. You have new profile that you can make, or you can load a profile. You just choose, you know, male or female for gender. Then you choose the first letter of a name and select from a list of pre-made names. So there's, you can't enter your own name or anything like that if you, and, yeah, you just choose from a list.
Sounds like there's a lot of weird design decisions in this game.
Yeah, there kind of is. And, the interesting thing is too that, like, you know, I'm tripping over this review because it's so weird. So yeah, you choose like male or female, right? And you choose from a list of names based on your first letter. They don't differentiate the genders with the names, so like, and there aren't very many names, so you choose like a P, for instance, you know, Paul or, you know, Peter or, you know, anything like that. Penelope, those are, you know, names that start with P. We could come up with some all day. This game has Pearl and Pablo. they got one name for Q, and that's Quincy.
And, what about Hubert?
No. But, and then W, you think, okay, yeah, William, Wendy, those are classic W names. They got Willow. That's it. It's a rotating like line too. So it's like you just can scroll through the list and it's just one name. It's so funny.
Wow.
So here's the reason for that is because when you start the game, then you go into a 6-round quiz show where the host, who is constantly like dancing around and doing stuff, and while the cameras pan around, and you know, it's very, you know, it does seem kind of cheap, you know, there's audience noise but no audience, there's a host and then there's the players, but that's okay, it's all right to be simple. The host will refer to your character by the name that you chose, and so they actually will say the name, because, you know, that's the reason to have a list of names. So these are just the names that the host knows how to say. And it sucks too because
only names that they know. That's it.
Yeah,
literally it.
They had Christopher, but not Chris. And they didn't have Catherine. I played this with Catherine. They didn't have her name. So I think she picked Quincy.
Nice.
Quincy.
And at some point, I played an old lady named Darwin, because Darwin's in there. I don't know why. Anyways. So you start the rounds and they're kind of shuffled around. The first 5 rounds anyway are shuffled around, to be different, you know, kind of randomized games with them. And they're all just variations on things like, you know, there's a balloon game that, like, you know, if you get the answer right, you can pop a balloon on the other player. Of course, every single one of these games is absolutely supposed to be like at least 3 preferably 5 to 8 players. That, you know, because like if you got two, you know, it basically it's a game that, you know, a lot of times if you get the answer right, you can in some way screw the other player over or steal their points or something like that. You know, the classic type of thing there. If you have two players, then you literally just have one person to kind of, you know, push around. And again, it feels no AI.
It feels very much like a Jackbox game in that, like, you can play it with three people, but doesn't mean you should play it with.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, by the way, the host only knows about, you know, 12 names, because I guess that's how many they have in here, and only knows one pronoun. So no matter what character or name you pick, if, you know, the most of the script tries to stay, like, away from using pronouns at all, but if they do, it's always his. So everybody's male in this game, just so you know.
Oh, man. Well,
if that's cool with you. Anyway, there's some stuff. Oh, one of my favorite things. So after you play the 5 rounds, whoever's on top, you know, you go into the 6th round, which is kind of a dunk the loser kind of thing. You know, you answer questions to blast the other player with like a water gun, and, you know, they're over a pool. And if you get, you know, their life bar diminished, and their life bar is determined by how much they've won so far, then they get dunked in the pool, and, you know, the winner is the winner. If you play a quick game, which is again located on the main screen, you know, then the game it's a regular game. It just skips straight to stage 6 and just starts both players with full health. But it refers to, it's like, your health is based on how well you've done so far, and you haven't actually done anything so far. So it does definitely have a tacked on feel to that quick mode. So there you go.
Well, it's a $15 game. It sounds like it was done mainly by one person. Do you think this is worth the price? To me, it seems like it should have come in at a little lower of a price, but
I checked this developer out, and most of the games do have that single developer feel to them. In fact, the developer's name is in the publishing title of the company. So that's kind of where I got that. And this is by far the most expensive software that Simplicity Games has come out with. Everything else has been kind of, you know, very simple platformer, very simple racing game. You know, that seems to be their thing. I think they might have overdone it on the simplicity. However, I will say that the questions themselves are engaging, and I could see this being fun with a group of people. I would say absolutely avoid this if you don't have a group of, like, maybe 4 or 5 friends that you can actually have over to couch co-op this. Because, by the way, we got 2 software codes for this. You can't actually play this multiplayer, so we just have 2 copies of this now.
I thought that there was some kind of, like, co-op or like, online mode or something, or, like, system link, maybe.
No. Nope.
Oh, man.
So it's, if you have a lot of people and you really want specifically a trivia game, it's not bad in that sense. I'm not going to say it's bad. It's just not great. And maybe worth your $15, but only in that use case. Everybody else, please avoid.
All right. Did someone have a question? I thought someone was going to say something.
Well, it's good to know the trivia is somewhat good, like the questions and stuff, but no online at all, because it's on PC as well. So no, okay.
Well, maybe on PC, I don't know, but
it doesn't look like it.
Not on Switch.
They advertise the remote play together split screen as the only features.
If you were wanting to, like, hone your skills in, like, in a specific trivia category, then good luck, because, you know, anytime a game starts and they let you choose, it's randomized between the, I don't know how many categories, but they kind of randomize 4 of them and then let you pick from those. So kind of cool.
They do advertise over 5,000 questions, so at least it sounds like there's a good variety of content.
Yeah. The actual questions were fine. They kept us playing it. I mean, we played, you know, at least 2 whole rounds. We played a lightning round, went right back to the regular stuff. Anyway, yeah, it's okay. But yeah, it's definitely look elsewhere for most people who would be looking at this kind of game.
I would like to try this with a big group of people. It does seem like, visually, it looks really cute. I like the character designs in the game.
Yeah, and
it looks like a good starting point for simplicity. They just need to work out some kinks and add more modes and allow either AI or online or something.
The characters are cute. They have silly little dances that they do. Most of them, you know, you'll kind of recognize. And yeah, the game is just goofy fun as far as that goes. But yeah, that's, it's just, you know, more game, please. You know, just put in some more game.
All right. Well, next up, Cetris, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released June 15th on Steam. For only $2.99, Cetris is a block placement puzzle game in which players place pieces in the empty squares on a puzzle board and fill all empty squares to clear the board. Purnell, doesn't seem too complex. How is it?
Yes. For any old heads out there, it's Daedalian Opus. So just go ahead and pick that up and be done with it. For people who don't know what the hell Daedalian Opus is, it is one of the very first original Game Boy games to have ever been released. In which you were just a man. I couldn't remember the general premise because, again, this is like the 80s, but you were a man crossing bridges to get to the next island to make another bridge, and you made the bridges. Crossing
bridges.
That's the story. That's what we. That's how we rolled in the 80s. But the way you had to make to cross the bridge, you had to first create the bridge by doing what you do in this game. Which is, instead of being a bridge, you're just filling in a rectangle or a square under the sea. but you are tasked with filling in a rectangle or a square of various dimensions utilizing tetrominoes or Tetris pieces to do so. You may find yourself in a situation where you're like, okay, here's a 5x5 grid. You have an L piece, a line piece, a two-block line piece, Z piece and a six block line or five block line piece, and you're finding yourself going, how the hell am I supposed to put this together? Well, trial and error, baby. You collect pieces, you pick them up off the holding table or the holding zones. You can drag them up and try to slot them into the puzzle. You can rotate them and you can flip them. So what I mean by flipping is essentially the mirror version of it. So just like how in Tetris you had the L piece and the reverse L piece. Well, the L piece is both in this game because you just flip it if you need to. And then you slot them in. And if you pull it off, you complete the puzzle. Simple as that. Though, as you get further in the game, of which there are about 80 or so puzzles, you'll find yourself in situations where you might have blocks that can only be occupied by specific colors because all the different, you know, tetrominoes are of different colors. And sometimes it might be like, hey, only like of the 5x5 square 2-1 and 2-3 can only be populated by a block that is yellow. So now all of a sudden you're like, crap, how many yellow blocks do I have? And of those yellow blocks, how can I place them in such a way that they overlap these spaces because nothing else will fill that spot? You will be tasked with making that kind of decision. It's kind of a chill puzzler because you're not being timed. As you go through the levels, you can just kind of take your time doing it. Though, unfortunately, unless I missed something, I couldn't really skip a puzzle. I mean, though, admittedly, for those who are listening, I was going one at a time, and then eventually said, I'm going to go from puzzle, 15 to puzzle 80. And the game was like, you can't go to puzzle 80? I'm like, well, damn it. But so for all I know, maybe puzzle 15 let me go up to puzzle 20. I don't know, because once I couldn't do 80, I just went back to doing my normal one at a time until I was satisfied with my review. I love the Daedalian Opus.
I do have one gripe with your review. You refer to the pieces as what? Tetrominoes?
Tetrominoes, but you could also refer to them as polyominoes.
Because tetromino is only four pieces.
And that, you know what it is?
Five, some have three.
They go up.
Yeah.
And that's funny because poly means many versus, tetra or,
Yeah, there's a piece with two pieces there. Looking at screenshots, there's one with five and three.
Septominoes.
Yeah, craziness. I'm just being.
What y'all are talking about, like, right now, just reminds me.
Dominoes.
Oh. Well, y'all are. Like, go ahead. I checked to see if I was muted. I was like, I don't know if I'm just talking into a muted mic.
The ether.
The incomprehensible way that y'all are speaking right now is exactly what algebra class sounded like to me shortly before I dropped out of college.
What? You don't like the Pythagorean theorem? It's so much fun. Quadratic equations for days, baby.
Well, anyway, Purnell, Cetris is $3. What do you think?
Oh, I didn't mention there's a time attack mode too.
Okay, Centrus is $3.
There's one more thing. All right. So one thing worth noting about this compared to a lot of other puzzle games that kind of work like this is that I will say that there's a decent variety of music that is rotated as you play the game. So you're not like just kind of like hearing the same music over and over and over again until you want to blow your brains out. You have a different amount of music. But as far as the time trials go, you can have time trials of being 3-piece puzzles, 4-piece puzzles, and 5-piece puzzles. And it's done by having a clock that ticks down, and they give you random puzzles to solve. So it's just like you can keep challenging yourself, whereas a lot of games that have time challenges will just be like, hey, here's a puzzle that you can just solve, leave, come back to the same puzzle, and just blitz it. No, this is an actual time challenge, so I like that about this. Yes, this is an easy buy-it and recommendation. I was sold on it because of the Dedalion Opus comparison, and
I think had that one, by the way. Updating.
I figured you would. If you didn't, I'd be sad and say, go get it. Or no, I would say go buy Cetrus. But yes, I am glad to hear you were on board, friend. The 80s were a decent time for games.
Cetrus is probably cheaper than Dedalion Opus.
I wonder if that game has a value right now.
Let me look.
I mean, it's $3. Look up Hayato
Alien.
I mean, my copy of Dedalion Opus only cost $5.
And still, yeah, Cetrus is cheaper.
Yeah, it's $9 on eBay.
Hey, look at that.
There you go.
That's expensive. That's triple the cost. And only $3.
Game on hardware you can't get anymore.
Does it have that rad-ass, like, you know, weird new agey like cover to it where you absolutely do not know what kind of game this is?
It's like freaking like Zeus, like flipping tiles.
Yeah, it's like Jesus with like a metal armband and stuff, and he's just like, you know, praying to the Illuminati with like a triangle around his face and stuff. It's wild. It's a puzzle game, folks.
Let there be bridges.
Anyway, moving on. Next game is Martian Panic, developed by Nix Digital, published by Funbox Media, released September 29th last year on the Switch for $39.99, but it's coming to the PS4 on June 29th. The Martians are coming, and it's up to you and your friends to stop them. Battle a horde of loony Martian invaders in this 1-4 player shoot 'em up game. Chris, what's going on in Martian Panic?
Shmup. Martian Panic. Okay, so this one has a weird story to how I came about it. So Joe asked me if I wanted to cover it. I was like, Martian Panic? I remember that because it's a Wii game before, like many, many years ago.
Yep.
And like a lot of Wii games, it was kind of a shovel-weary kind of rail shooter. But when I started to look at it, because I was, you know, I always look at the games, believe it or not. I don't actually just blindly accept every game that comes my way. I saw that the company was selling a peripheral for this in the form of a big toy laser gun that you were to put your Wii remote in. Not Wii remote. Well, maybe originally there was one. I don't know. But your Switch Joy-Con goes into this gun, and then you can like shoot with laser sounds, like pew pew laser sounds. And so I said, yes, Joe, I will take this game. And in fact, I have just bought the laser, and like I have that.
Yes.
And
the Wii version came with a shotgun.
Ah, that would have been so much better.
A green shotgun.
Okay, yeah, I am remembering this game then. So yeah, I now have I bought with my own money the laser gun peripheral that was not supplied by the developer or publisher, rather. Just letting y'all know. Anyways, but I did that purely because I wanted to experience this game fully as intended. And boy, what a game. So this is a rail shooter where you get to choose one of six characters who are, you know, kind of, you know, they're stereotypes of like the 50s or whatever. You know, the housewife, the salesman, the kid with the, or the boy. He's just the boy. But, you know, he's got like the 3D glasses, kind of looks a little bit, you know, Zombies Ate My Neighbors-ish. And then, of course, the hick. You know, Jeb the farmer, a cheerleader, and Chuck the jazz player. So,
yeah. You
know, yeah. He's, and, yeah, they're all voice acted and stuff, which is kind of cool. You know, they have little quips that they say constantly throughout the stage. And there's about 8 stages, And each one is just the same thing. You shoot at Martians as they come along. They got little robot drones that come out, and you shoot those two. You shoot at, you know, eventually you come across a boss. You got to shoot that thing down, too. Try not to shoot people who are innocent. Although, unlike most of these kind of rail shooter games, there's not a strict penalty for if you shoot innocent people. Your person just quips that they shouldn't be in the way, and then you just kind of move on and probably get it a little bit of a hit to your score. That's about it. No big deal. So, yeah. It's so here's the thing, is that sadly, light gun technology and rail shooters in general really peaked in the arcade with, like, you know, all the House of the Deads and, like, that cool Jurassic Park game and, like, you know, Time Crisis, just all that good stuff. And it at home, it peaked in the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era when we, or it, probably PlayStation, I would be most, I would say generously the PlayStation, maybe even PlayStation 2 era, when we had CRT TVs and could, like, point guns at the screen and just shoot stuff, and it was no worries. Since the HD era, all of our shooting games are now moving a cursor along with gyro controls. That was the case with the Wii, it's the case with the Switch now, and forever shall be, you know, until they figure out something else. So this game has to basically rely on the gyroscopic controls ported over from a Wii game into a Switch game, and some wires got crossed there because this game, like, you do set it up initially, like, you do a calibration, and then the game just kind of ignores that, and as soon as you start, your cursor's out of the screen, and you're like pointing, like, to your extreme left, and then it's in the center of the screen, and you're like, what is going on here? So the game knows this. Here's the thing, they know this because they put a function in the controller where when you push the Y button, no matter what, the cursor will go into the middle of the screen and will move from there relative to the gyro controls. So if you are aiming at the center of the screen and you push Y, then it will recalibrate to something that will work. It will work for about 5 seconds because, well, literally, here's how it goes. You calibrate the control, you put the cursor in the middle, you know, the reticule in the middle of the screen, right where you want it. You blast a few aliens. The blasting's pretty good. I'll get to that in a minute. But then the cursor will, the reticule will be taken away so that your character can move. Your character can't shoot while moving. They just move you from scene to scene, so that you can shoot in a gallery. You know, that's not the worst crime, but the problem is it recalibrates every time. So basically, every move you make, every step you take, is going to be, you know, you move to a new area, center the cursor in the middle of the screen, shoot, and then reload, and then move the cursor again. Because here's the thing, is you have to constantly reload, and because this isn't a light game, you can't do the classic move of just aim your controller off the screen and push a button. Like, that's normally how you would reload, and then you can get right back into it. You actually have to push the A button, and you have to keep a look, you have to keep an eye on your ammo, because if you let your ammo run out, you get a penalty where you can't shoot anything for a while, and it just sits there and clicks, 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 and then it takes a few seconds to, like, load up, as to opposed to instantly if you push the button on your own. So it behooves you to just constantly reload your gun every, like, 3 shots, even though you have, like, 6 or 8 of them, depending on the weapon. That's annoying. The other annoying thing is when you got this thing mounted in a plastic laser gun, which one's Y and which one's A? Which one, you know, you're sitting here moving your thumb around this thing when you're supposed to be pulling the trigger. So yeah, just a kind of an annoying interface. The game itself is fun. It's very campy, like extremely campy. It's very, very, parody-like. You know, it's a little, it's pretty grown heavy, really, but it's lighthearted and fun, and I enjoy it. I would actually really like to see, like, a real, like, light gun version of this that's, like, fast and playable. You know, sometimes things will drop, health pickup, sometimes you get extra guns, those are pretty cool, like a shotgun is pretty cool, because it covers a wide swath, and you can take down more than one thing. There's a pulse laser that's really cool. you know, like there's some good guns in here. Like I said, the enemy behavior is very predictable, but you know, it's like any rail shooter. You're just gonna, you know, keep playing through and memorizing the levels. There is a novice mode that gives you infinite continues, so you can rich kid strat your way through the entire game.
Nice.
If you so choose. Yeah, you get, as soon as you continue, you're exactly where you were. So that's kind of nice. I like the music. I think is just public domain kind of black and white movie music. I didn't get much of a sense that there was an actual soundtrack here. It just seemed to be kind of like just stuff they pinched from, you know, from an archive or something like that. That's not a problem. This game is very much couched in that kind of 50s sci-fi era, so it's like not a big deal. Voice acting is very over the top. Sometimes it sounds bad. Like it was recorded back in 15 years ago technology for a shovelware game and not upgraded for this version.
Oh,
that's okay though, because it nothing that anybody ever says is important ever. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Just like our show.
Exactly. And, you know, even though we have these nice mics, and I would argue that we actually sound pretty good, because I listen to some podcasts where I'm like, oh, they don't sound as good as we do, and we suck.
No.
Just kidding.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
We absolutely.
So, yeah, there's not much else to say about this. So here's the... Here's the chorus that everybody is waiting for. This game has performance issues on the Switch.
What?
Frame rate absolutely goes into the toilet when something big is happening. And I'm talking like fully stopping for a bit.
Ouch.
Before it catches back up. Now, it's not so bad that the gameplay is compromised, but... Honestly, this game is struggling to be on this modern system from 2017, this game from, like, I think 2007, and it doesn't even, it's not a good-looking game. I mean, it's old-looking, and it was cheap when it came out, so it's like, there's no excuse, really. They're rendering, like, it's taking them, like, 5 minutes to render, like, all 15 polygons in this thing, so it's like,
jeez.
Anyway. It has that. It didn't bother me as much as other things did, but that is worth noting for people. You know, maybe you'll have better luck on the PS4 if you're really looking to get into this game.
I hate it because the Switch is never going to be able to have a good light gun game, because there's no sensor bar. There's no communication between where the remote is pointing and the television. This is the problem Skyward Sword had and why I quit. I was really enjoying that port for a while until I realized that there's this constant, as soon as you go in sort of a twisty pattern with the remote, your Link is just pointing his sword behind him at a certain point. You had to hit the button to reset that. And then it was a big problem because they made that House of the Dead remake.
Yeah.
For Switch, and it's the same thing. You just can't, because there's no communication about where the center of the controls are, and it doesn't matter with something like Splatoon, because you're constantly correcting with the controls. You're just fine-tuning with where you're holding the controller. Same with, you know, Zelda and bow and arrow aiming and stuff like that. So that's a bummer.
Yeah, it's not ideal, and yeah, I've had that House of the Dead remake wishlisted for a while, but yeah, I don't know if I'm going to pull the plug on it, but
I just went and looked. It's on sale for $8.50 right now on Switch. But everyone has said that it's just frustrating for the exact same reasons you mentioned. So if you just don't mind keeping that thumb on the reset button,
that's kind of how it is nowadays. But I mean, luckily I still got my Genesis and my Justifier, and you know,
yeah, good boy.
I can still play some good light gun games with at home. But yeah, it's like I said, the technology is they haven't figured out what to do to supplant the bygone CRT and light gun technology that was so good.
Yep.
Was the Justifier the one that came with Lethal Enforcers?
Yes, it was. Very, very well.
Blue, light blue.
Or pink.
Yeah, blue and pink. There were two different ones. Blue is most common, I think. But yeah, I think we had both of them.
Oh, nice. I hardly ever see the pink one.
Didn't know there was a pink one.
You can plug in two blue ones and it'll work just fine. It's just the pink one plugs into the blue one, so you can use just one Genesis port and have two guns. That's why there's a little telephone connection on the blue Justifiers, because that's where the pink one's supposed to plug in.
It's called the Justifier.
It is.
That's amazing.
Well, Martian Panic is sitting at $40 digital. I know physical you can find cheaper, and even with the light gun accessory, or not light gun accessory, but just gun plastic accessory. What are your thoughts on this game? What do you think on the prices? Just give us all the info.
Well, okay, so the price I specifically wanted to call out, because what the hell? $39.99 for digital when it's $19.97 on physical right now. The new listings are between $19.97 and about $25. I haven't really seen them. The original Switch version, weirdly enough, actually does get a little bit more. I think it's had more value applied to it, because it's like in the $30 range to $40 right now. Yeah, if you buy this game physically with a with the gun, the plastic gun bit that you may or may not want, I don't know. I didn't really sell it that well because it was cool for me, but you know, it doesn't enhance the game much. I mean, it adds pew pew to your shots, which is good enough for me. Can you hear it on the mic?
No.
Wow, I'm holding it right up to it. This Discord thing. Yeah, okay, well.
Try doing it while talking at the same time.
Okay, let's. Can you hear me talking with the laser now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's the sound of the laser.
Pew pew.
Yeah, pew, it really pew. Does. Pew pew pew.
That's pretty awesome.
Those both together are $40 to buy, and if you're gonna go anyway with this game, I would recommend that way, so that you know. Yeah, I don't understand why it's that expensive digitally. There's it seems to be a mystery to me. So for that reason, I would have to give it a deny it to purchase it digitally for that price. I'm going to say once I got used to it, it was fun enough that I could recommend the physical game or the digital game if it got priced down to something more
reasonable
akin to its roots. That is to say, at least make it as cheap as House of the Dead remake. I mean, gosh. I definitely have thoughts on that price. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I would not recommend this game for 40 smackers. That's a whole ass Etrian Odyssey right now, yo. That's halfway to the full collection. You kidding
truth.
Me?
Yeah.
Truth.
So there you go.
All right. Well, one final thing to talk about tonight is some DLC for Metal Hellsinger, the Essential Hits Pack. Developed by The Outsiders, published by Funcom, released June 13th as DLC for Metal Hellsinger for $9.99. I believe it's only for current-gen PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. I did not see anything specifically mentioning the Xbox One or PS4 version, so I believe this is current-gen only. Anyway, the joy of demon slaying to the beat existing on a spectrum, and with the Essential Hits Pack, you get the entire rainbow. Dive into the hells with this mixed genre pack of 8 hit songs from some of the biggest bands in the world. Purnell, this is basically just new music in the game, yeah?
Yes, sir. I'm switching to speaker because I want to read. So, sorry to have to do that. Book. That's right. Because since this whole thing is literally just music, then that means the most important aspect I'm going to mention is, well, what is the music? So this song pack actually adds 8 new songs to the game. And it's interesting because it's called the Essential Hits Pack, and the game is called Metal Hellsinger. None of these tracks are metal at all.
I mean,
in fact, they are wild, it's just... It's a wild swing. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, per se, because if anything, I think it's actually pretty interesting that they went this route. Let me name the tracks that are on here. We got Feel Good Inc. by the Gorillaz, Uprising by Muse, Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode, I Love It by Iconopop, which I kept...
I want to murder... demons to that song so bad.
It's pretty. I don't care. Bam.
I love it.
Tsunami by DVBBS and Borges, which I actually hadn't heard of before. Believe it or not. Down with the Sickness by Disturbed.
Now that's metal.
Runaway. Oh my God. That's there we go. Runaway, You and I by Galantis. Never and Misery Business by Paramore. So now I can switch back. because I read everything I need to read. So
I mean, I could have read that for you.
Nah, got to get all weird with the sound on this thing. So the weird, the interesting thing about this is that I'm not even knocking the choice of music. I think it's interesting that they went this route and said, let's just throw some like wildly unexpected music, with the exception of Disturbed, into this thing. But it has me wondering what their intent was for it there, because initially my thought was, well, I'm not going to go around to somebody who dislikes metal music and go, now because this Essential Hits pack is in the game, you can go buy Metal Hellsinger. No, that's not going to sell a non-metalhead to Metal Hellsinger. But as a person who likes metal but also likes other genres of music, what? It was interesting to blast Monsters and Demons to this style of music instead of what's already, you know, pack and parcel in the game itself. It was, if anything, it feels like a fun novelty for the game.
I just wanted to interrupt and say that I have a similar thing that I like to do, and that is to play Excite Truck on the Wii, which allows you to have a custom soundtrack, and I like to replace the butt rock music that comes packaged with the game with dreary English singer-songwriter Nick Drake.
And I call how do you do that? Like, did you hack the game, or are you just putting
it's a feature.
How are you doing that? It's a Wii game.
Yeah, you put MP3s of any kind on your SD card that is up to 1 gigabyte. And
you're freaking kidding me? That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, you can do it.
I just love your
choice. Leave it to Chris to find some really unexpected and awesome like game tweak for a classic product. I love to hear it.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, so you didn't know that one.
Oh, I love Excite Truck. It's one of my favorite games.
Fantastic.
I kick myself for never getting a chance to try it. I was one of the ones where I was like, I don't know. I need to save some money.
It's still like $3 for a complete in-box copy. Nobody cares about Excite Truck. You can just go get it.
Excite Bots was also good.
It was very good.
What was the second one? What was the game Grant said?
Excite Bots.
Excite Bots Trick Racing.
Excite Bots. Now, I've never even heard of that one.
It's like the same thing, but they're Transformers and kind of bugs. Instead of just trucks.
Now you got me wondering, is that kind of does it end up working kind of like how Stunt Race FX would have been if it didn't have the slowdown?
A little bit. I mean, it's more like you do like cool stuff instead of like racing for first place or whatever. You just try to get points to end the race with, and it's really, really cool like that. There's lots of crashing and it's very fun. Anyway,
as soon as this review is over, I'm looking both of those games up.
So they're fantastic, but you kind of need the Wii remote you got to kind of play it on its original platform. It's one of those.
Oh, I still got it, baby. I ain't messing around on this. I got to get down to business. Get my Excite Truck on. Excite Bot on.
I'm seeing it complete with manual. Buy it now on eBay for $10. So
told you.
I work with a guy that worked on both those games.
Oh, really? Sweet.
He was an art guy. Yeah. Maybe it was just for Excitebots and forward, but I think it was Monster, wasn't it? Monster Games?
Yeah, Monster. Yeah. Yeah, I think they work on NASCAR games now just one of the many developers. It's too bad. They need to bring back some more Excite Truck.
This is Japanese import version for $10.
I mean, if all they're working on is NASCAR, I wouldn't be surprised if a number of those guys are still at their desk wishing for a day to say, hey, how about NASCAR Excite Bots? That could be fun, right? Get back to your desk, Jim.
I'd play it.
You and me both. I'd play that before I play a general NASCAR game. NASCAR so anyway, Metal Hellsinger got that.
I don't even remember what game we were talking about.
Metal Hellsinger got that DLC pack. Pernell, what do you think of it?
Well, this is one of those things where it's purely subjective to your taste in music, honestly. I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, I'm not listening to all these tracks on the radio in general, but they fit the game when I want to get a little ridiculous. But it does make me want them to do something more akin to like a vote or something. Like, hey, if you guys have access to artists that you can get a license for your game, throw it to a vote and compose a list of tracks to make Essential Hits Pack 2 or something.
Really good idea. That's Brand, really good
why
idea.
Don't you hit them up and get your music in the game? I want to murder things to like your
I mean people I didn't write Misery Business, what can I say?
Well, you should cover Misery Business for this show.
If you sing it,
all right, fuck it, I'm down.
I do
just make your own version, call it Joy Corporation. I don't know. You'll be good. You'll be George good.
Great Corporation.
Great band. I like that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I do feel like the, I think it's like those are songs that excite people, you know? And so I kind of laughed at it too, but it works, man. I mean, that's a killer Muse track. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I would blow up Demons to Sail Away. Fuck it.
Well, I mean, the trick might be take one of your current tracks and get, what's this freaking, the, what, God, I'm so sleepy right now. The freaking Wet Pancakes man who I'm friends Norg. With, but I can't, Norg, God damn it. Get Norg to do vocals for it, for the hell of it, and then slap that out there. Like, look, you want to get excited to blast Demons? Get a load of this shit. Metal, but we got a little bit. It can work, I believe.
Let's not come up with any more horrible ideas that I'm sure will actually happen because we have way too much free time and bad ideas. The Essential Hits Pack is $9.99. It includes the 8 songs that we mentioned before. Something to note is that the DLC has bumped the game's rating to M. Which makes me wonder wonder why they didn't just target an M rating from the start and go with like hyper violence in the game, or why didn't they get censored versions of the songs?
Yeah, like I feel like that would upset people, but I'm with you. I wonder what sort of like disadvantage there is now, or would there have been to go
M? Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, it came out at teen, right? Did it start at teen? What he said it got it bumped up to M, which means it came out at teen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they got those teen sales, and now they can do the lyric stuff. And like, well, if you buy our DLC, you got to get those rated M. But the teen sales have been made, or a number of the teen sales have been made, you know, because let's be honest, the rating, if it's purely based around just lyrics to songs, I can kind of understand that because they want the songs to be, you know, as intended, not, you know, edited for radio. So you're just going to get the songs, it bumps right up, but by then people who are going to still focus on the rating already got it, possibly, so, or a number of those sales have happened, so I think I can totally see the logic behind it. But as it stands, like, hey, I'm good with that. I'd rather have that than, like, you know, some of the guys like, you people, I don't know, I can't even think of, like, a freaking, like, censored version of a song, because I'm fucking sleepy. The point is, the pricing on this game, the best way I could think of describing it is I'm thinking like some like Rock Band and buying music DLC for that. And that I feel like the pricing of this DLC is on par with what I would have seen in a Rock Band song pack.
Pretty much.
And beyond that, it's just a matter of if the music it seems like is up your alley or you're okay with just trying different music in the game, regardless of if it's your flavor of the month for the radio. There you go. There's your answer. But pricing wise, I think it's a solid pickup. It just becomes a matter of if the music hits your fancy or not.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Well, we are done. We made it through this episode.
We did it.
Yay. Brooke's still here. Yay.
Yeah.
Brooke, what did you think of the show?
Do-do-do.
I thought it was a good show. I was actually just chatting Pernell on the side, and Pernell sounds extra composed tonight. I don't know what's going on over there, bud.
I appreciate it, and I'm also genuinely surprised I felt extra composed. I appreciate that, so thank you.
I probably sound tired as shit because I am tired as shit. It has been a long day with Simon. Him and his abscess, and I cried last night. I was so worried about him. I was like, what if he has to have a leg amputated, or what if he doesn't make it? And I was just like so heartbroken all night.
Is he an indoor cat, or does he go outside sometimes?
Indoor. So he got into a scuffle with one of our other cats.
Gosh.
Why can't they all just get along?
They have enough space in the damn house. Just take a quadrant.
Yeah, but whatever. Thanks to all of y'all for being here, hanging out, and doing the reviews. Music for this episode. Fun. Grant, since you're here, we'll play something from you. What should we play? Yeah, do you have anything new that we could play?
Apparently there's a song called
metal yell there.
That's the vocals. Those are the vocals. I play it, it should be game related, right? Gosh, I haven't put up any games
matter, whatever.
I don't know. I did that. I released a track for a short film last year with Beardo singing on it. Did you ever hear that one? You might have played that one. Called Love Letter.
Oh yeah, we played that.
Okay,
I have played again if you want.
All right,
play it again.
Let's do that. Play it again.
Poor love letter.
All right. Well, that's the music for the episode. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Of course we do.
Quick, everyone together.
Let's end on that. Perfect.
Busquad. Busquad.